Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
And by the way, for all you young radio announcers, you always wait till that part before you start talking. I learned that the hard way a number of years ago. 73 degrees, partly cloudy, northwest winds at 11 miles an hour. Our dew point 59, nice breeze. We're getting into that area. When you get those dew points into the 50s, you can almost throw those windows open and enjoy that breeze. And tomorrow looks great, as you heard a moment ago, 10:08. What's going on the local real estate scene? Is it still a big-time seller's market? Joining us from the Real Estate Radio Hour on Saturday mornings here on CCO, Andy Prasky, RE/MAX Advantage Plus. And co-host with Chris Rooney here on CCO. Andy, how you doing tonight?
Hey, I'm great. How's it going?
Very good. Thanks for the time. Thanks for staying up late.
You must really know me because this is right at my bedtime. So I, I'm teasing. But anytime we get a chance to give you guys a call, we love to get out the message of what's going on in real estate. So we made an exception tonight.
Yeah, you know, Andy, I'm kind of like you. We're about the same age. You're younger and better looking. But the one thing I will say is I catch the news, the weather, and I hit the sack. So, you know, staying up late and doing the show till 11, I'm wiped out the next day.
Sure. Oh, I can imagine.
Andy, what's going in the local real estate market? Because you keep hearing over and over, it's a big-time seller's market. Properties are on the market a short period of time. You better be ready to move. Are you still seeing that now? We're into July.
Well, for sure. You know, and you know, traditionally we have the cyclical part of the season where we call this kind of the dog days of summer, where after the 4th of July, we start seeing that slow down traditionally until the kind of the kids go back to school to the state fair, and then we'll pick up again and have that nice fall, you know, momentum. But it's really an unusual year. We've had, you know, with inventories being as low as they are, it's at a 14-year low right now, and it's one of those things where, you know, there's a couple things happening that I think a lot of us didn't realize would happen all at the same time. And one of them is that interest rates are staying as low as they are. And so what's happening is with rents on the rise and interest rates staying put, which nobody expected, it's making it very attractive for people to transition from being renters to wanting to be homeowners again. So it's keeping that demand on the marketplace that normally you get people that will fluctuate between both renting and owning. And this year we're seeing a lot of people, especially millennials. Millennials are going to make up more than 50% of our buyers this year. Just because they're going from being renters to homeowners faster than a lot of people expected.
And it gets back to the old adage, Andy, it's still a really great investment for young people. It's like my oldest is getting to the point where she's moving along in her career, and hopefully at some point I'm going to be sitting down with her and having that talk. It's like time to move out of, you know, renter mode and try and find a home.
Well, you know, and those young kids, I tell you, Think about what they've seen in their lives. You know, they've seen parents that have overextended. They are the infomercial generation that, you know, they've been sold things their whole lives. And so these are kids that are smart. They're almost fiscally conservative. I see them saving more money than generations prior that I've helped sell houses and buy houses with. I'm seeing where they're making it make sense, where it's a local commute. You know, either they're walking distance to work or biking, or they can grab the, you know, the commuter, and they're making decisions that I'm seeing that, you know, my generation never would think about. We'd buy the big brand new pickup truck and make the commute, and they're not doing that. So it's actually very exciting and refreshing to see the changes that are being made right now in real estate, you know.
Andy, let's talk about where the really tough spots are. There are certain price ranges. I'm sure if you want to get into a luxury home, there's probably inventory out there. I keep hearing that, you know, the real affordable stuff, the so-called starter homes, are really hard to come by.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, there's just over 2 months of supply, which is, you know, we like to see 5, 6, 7 months of supply out there just to keep the market balanced. So we're in a extreme seller's market on paper. And what happens is, like they talk about, you know, new construction should be picking up the pace, and, you know, they've referenced how the home builders aren't keeping up with the demand. Well, the challenge we're facing right now, Steve, too, is that new construction, by the time you buy a lot and you build your house on there, you're into the mid-threes to, you know, upper fours without little to no effort. That price point is, I don't want to say the word saturated, but there's plenty of inventory in that $350,000 to $500,000 price range. It's the under 250, it's the under 300 that we are really struggling to keep the supply in front of the buyers, and that's where we're seeing the crazy, you know, you read the articles about people, you know, just emotionally throwing bids out there and bidding $10,000 more than what it's worth. That's the price points that you're seeing that happen in. It's not the necessarily the high-end markets that's happening yet.
And Andy, we're not seeing new developments in that price point, are we?
I just, you know, and it's almost impossible. We've sat on Saturday mornings and we've hashed this out many a times, and we've even had members from the Met Council in, and we've talked about, you know, if somebody were to develop a piece of land, most of the lots nowadays that are single-family lots are between, I would say, on the low side, in the upper 80s to the low 100s. And then you start getting into the more desirable neighborhoods like the Plymouths and the Maple Groves and the, you know, just that's kind of my end of town, so that's why I reference that.
But Woodbury is another one that comes to mind.
Right, and those lots will jump up into the 200,000 range without having the house on it. So it's hard to build a $250,000 house on a $230,000 lot. So, you know, and then a lot of times, too, in an effort to make the cities better and more managed and conducive with their growth strategies, they'll have covenants, they'll have associations, they'll have architectural requirements that sometimes make people spend a little more to make the house appeasing or to meet their architectural requirements. And so there's a lot of those things that I think that we really should take a look at in the future here and sit back and say, hey, you know, can we ease back on some of these requirements and maybe have cities subsidizing some of the fees? I mean, a lot of these fees in cities, you know, that we're building in now, by the time there's the whack and sack connection fees at, you know, $14,000 or $15,000 for the builder, before that the developer was paying $15,000, $20,000, $30,000 for connection fees to sewer lines and water lines. And don't get me wrong, somebody's got to pay for it. But if we wanted to truly make an effort to make affordable housing in that price range, those are some of the decisions we're going to have to make as a community here in the near future.
Well, and Andy, you and Chris talk about it all the time as well, and that is raw materials to build a home. Labor right now. I mean, these construction companies are having a hard time finding qualified people to build this stuff.
Oh, you bet. I mean, in this, like a couple weeks back here, we had the hailstorms that hit the Twin Cities markets, and some of the contractors are telling me that their crews are booked out 18 months. And when you think about that, so now if you want new siding put on your existing house, good luck. I mean, the supply's not there, or if it's there, it's going to be limited. The labor for sure is hard to come by. And, you know, back when we went through, you know, in the building industry, we called it the depression here, but it obviously was a recession. But, you know, a lot of people exited the building industry because of the vulnerability. They wanted to find careers that were more stable in other industries that they felt safe, you know. And some of our tradespeople were, you know, in the 40s, 50-year-old range where they'd had the experience and they got out of the business. And so those that are still in the business now, we're not seeing those guys coming back and those gals coming back to the industry. So there is a limit on how fast houses can be produced with the amount of people that are still here.
All right. So. Existing housing. You talked about where the market is right now. The lower end of the market's really tough. Those first-time opportunities. And I know in the neighborhood you and I live in, up in the northern suburbs, Champlin area, northern Hennepin County, you know, some of these more, they need a lot of work. And there aren't a ton of buyers, I would assume, in the marketplace that are willing to buy a fixer-upper. I would assume still the large percentage of buyers want turnkey.
For sure. That is absolutely the case. And so we're seeing in the days of where there's been some deferred maintenance, or maybe they haven't kept up with. I've heard people say it looks like it was something from the past, like a time capsule.
Sure.
The houses that are being brought to market, but the younger kids with the families the way they are nowadays, and the parents and the in-laws, it'll say, hey, let's all work together and help you fix that house up, and let's take on that project. It doesn't happen as much now as it used to, when there are more people in the trades. And so, we see a lot more of the buyers now that instead of buying that house for, $200,000, they'd rather pay $250,000 and have everything done and be turnkey. The lenders, a lot of times like that. That's easier for everybody there because there's not escrows or we have to do any new construction financing, to get those projects built. There's not, the draws and the inspections. And so, yeah, a lot of people are going for and are willing to pay a little bit more to get that project that's already completed.
Yeah, and I suppose it goes without saying, another thing you guys always bring up on Saturday mornings with Denny Long on the Real Estate Radio Hour, once again between 10 and 11 here on CCO, is if you're in the market, be ready to go. Work with the lender and have your ducks in a row on the financing side.
Oh, for sure. And, having the homework done, before you go take the test, as I say, because the test is you have to be prepared, and it's going to happen quick and fast. And, today's market, Steve, I sit there with a lot of folks, and like when they're building houses, we used to have their house up for sale before they would even sit down with the builder. Now we're waiting until the houses are framed before we even talk about putting the house on the market so that they're only homeless for a month or two, so it's timing is a big challenge. And I know that a lot of people that now are selling, we're starting to see the selling techniques, for example, where sellers are having contingencies with the buyers, where the sellers are actually saying, hey, buyer, I know you want this house, but I need at least a 7-day window to find another property that's suitable for me before I agree to sell the house to you. And that's something we haven't seen for years.
Yeah, and there seems to be more and more of that people who may want to sell, may want to downsize, move into another situation, are leery. Are they going to be able to find what they want? I'm sure you run into that all the time, Andy.
We run into it, I always think about, as neighborhoods transition and you say, well, there's that, really nice couple at the end of the street and their kids were off to college years ago and they're living in that big, beautiful house, they've got to be getting ready to sell. And they don't sell. And then they don't sell. And then they renovate and they stay. And I think there's a lot more people staying put nowadays that they like the neighborhood. They like the commute. Maybe they can't replace what they have anywhere near the same price range of what they have invested into where they're living currently. So they stay put. And it's just an interesting market we're in for sure. There's a lot of parts that are moving and there's a lot of parts that are sitting still. So it makes it interesting every day.
Yeah, and I would assume now more than ever, having someone on your side with experience is a big deal.
Well, and I've always, of course, being an advocate for our industry,
sure.
When you're sitting down to make, one of the biggest financial decisions of your life, why don't you interview a couple agents? And instead of walking in there, and I know that this is something that when I'm in an open house, for an example, or somebody on my team's in an open house, and the consumer walking through the door, they are so educated. I mean, the buyers nowadays spend more time doing research than ever before, and I think that there's an illusion that they also know how to negotiate, that they also know how to write the contracts. Just because they can do the research and find the properties doesn't mean that they can cut the deals and make sure that all the T's are crossed and the I's are dotted. And our industry is interesting. The sellers always, or most time, pay the commissions for the agent. So if you're looking to buy a property, you can hire the best agent in the business, and the person that's selling the house is going to pay him for you. And it seems crazy to me that people want to buy direct or buy without somebody helping them when they're somebody else is paying for that that service and that, like I say, experience and negotiation power that comes with somebody with some experience.
All right, on the flip side, Andy, there's someone out there who's thinking, well, we are empty nesters now, and we are thinking about potentially selling. Not right now, but maybe next year. Are there steps you recommend to kind of get ready for that? Are there improvements that people should think about to make sure that the house, maybe if it's not turnkey or 100% perfect for the marketplace, what are some of the things people who may sell should think about?
Well, that's a great and everybody's version of what's normal is different. And so what I do recommend is that if you were willing to invest a little bit into your future, you know, we talk about staging houses and we talk about spending the time to have an interior decorator or a stager come into the house before we sell it. I am a big advocate of getting those people involved, even sometimes a year or two in advance.
Wow.
You also bring the real estate agent out there a year or two in advance, and then you can make a strategy, right? So maybe you don't take on the full project all at once. Maybe you take on a little bit at a time, or, you know, again, we strategize on, you know, what needs to go first, what needs to go second. A lot of times, I think the biggest battles that, you know, like Chris and I, we talk about this frequently, is getting the house decluttered. And sometimes somebody else coming in and basically giving you that, you know, come to Jesus meeting and saying, hey, this has to get out of here. You have to move this. You declutter over here. Let's move everything out. And then when that's done, then you start realizing like, wow, you know, the big spaces that are here, let's repaint, let's recarpet. And sometimes for very, very little of an investment, you can get that really nice return. And you don't have to do it fast. It can be done over time, and then you're comfortable as things are happening. You know where you're going, and it's not such a scary transition. You know.
Well, and after I sat in on the show with you and Chris one morning, Denny was away for a couple of weeks. I heard that comment, and I went home, and I'm like, "Wow, that stack of old magazines! I don't even see that anymore." And it's funny how that works in bringing someone in. Even if you're not sure you're going to sell, it is huge, isn't it, Andy?
It sure is. You know, it's amazing what someone else coming in and giving you another person's opinion, and especially when, you know, it's not a relative, it's not your child, it's not your parent, and you're having somebody independent coming in there and giving you an opinion, and then you can process that information at your speed and make the decisions that are right for you and your family. And, again, it is ridiculous, you know, how simple some of these little things that can be done that can add so much more value in the eyes of a buyer. And it's those professionals are worth every penny.
All right, Andy. Well, I know you're very busy, and I know you and Chris, another Real Estate Radio Hour this Saturday morning with Denny between 10 and 11 here on CCO. How do people find out about you? What's the website?
Well, you know, if you're looking for me personally, my website is Prasky, which is Prasky.com, and we can go there for, you know, anything with real estate or any questions. And then join us every Saturday. We really love the CCO listeners. They bring us some of the questions that we leave that show, and you couldn't make up these questions. I mean, they're fantastic. And what it really does is it makes a great show, because authentic, good questions and emails and texts to the show, we love it. So join us every Saturday. We'd love to hear those questions live.
All right, outstanding. Thanks, Andy. Take care.
Thank you very much.
All right, there he is, Andy Prasky, realtor, RE/MAX Advantage Plus, and co-host of the Real Estate Radio Hour here on CCO with Chris Rooney. It is 10:25. Quick break. More in a moment. 10:29 here at CCO, 73 degrees. We'll have the weather in a moment. Amelia Earhart stories won't go away. Have you heard this? A Japanese military history buff has apparently undermined a new theory that Amelia Earhart survived a crash landing in the Pacific during her attempt at a round-the-world flight in 1937. The history blogger has posted the same photograph that formed the backbone of a History Channel documentary that aired on Sunday that argued Earhart was alive in July of 1937. But the book the photo was in was apparently published 2 years before the famed aviator disappeared. The History Channel is looking into the matter, but stands behind its documentary. The undated black and white photo is a group of people standing on a dock in the Marshall Islands. One of the people seems to be a slim woman with her back to the camera. The documentary argued that a proved Earhart, along with her navigator, Fred Noonan, landed in 1937 in the Japanese-held Marshall Islands, where they were picked up by the military and held prisoner. The two-hour show drew a strong 4.32 million viewers, the biggest audience on cable for the week, according to the Nielsen Company. The History Channel said Tuesday its investigators are exploring the latest developments about Amelia Earhart, and we will be transparent in our findings, end quote. How about that? So they still continue the search for the wreckage of the plane or any evidence whatsoever. It is 10:31 here at CCO. Another big car event coming to the state fairgrounds. The O'Reilly Auto Parts Street Machine Summer Nationals are coming up, and Doc Riley will join us in a moment.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
10:38, 22 before 11 here at CCO. All the news and weather at 11, then Al Molenberg here on CCO. I remember when I was a kid, this was about the time of summer when they would announce the fall television season, and you would start seeing the promos for all the big shows coming up on CBS and NBC and ABC. It was a big deal, the fall television season. Well, it's not so much that way anymore because they're rolling out new programming, and that's with cable and all the other competitors like Netflix and Amazon and so on and so forth. But I do have a note about PBS. Its fall lineup will be anchored by filmmaker Ken Burns' The Vietnam War, a 10-part documentary debuting on September 17th. I love Ken Burns' work and can hardly wait for this next one. I don't think he's ever done anything that I didn't learn a lot from. Of course, one of my favorite as a sports fan was baseball a number of years ago. But the Roosevelts, I mean, the list goes on, just tremendous. But Ken Burns, The Vietnam War, once again, debuts September 17th. Another highlight of the schedule will be Russian President Vladimir Putin. It'll be featured on Frontline, a two-part documentary on his rise and his rule, airing October 25th and November 1st. Hey, Kev, you a big fan of Ken Burns? You ever catch any of that stuff? Like, I thought he did a tremendous job documenting baseball when he did that documentary on the Grand Game.
Yeah, I've seen parts of that, but I know he's done other stuff. Didn't he do something on the Civil War also?
Yep, did something on the Roosevelts.
Right. Yeah, the baseball one is the only one I've seen, but I know he's done some other stuff.
Yeah, and he's got a big one coming up, the Vietnam War.
Oh, okay.
And that's this fall. You know, in those big miniseries and that sort of thing, it's hard to set it aside. But now with DVR and all that sort of stuff, it's a little bit more doable. I generally don't watch a ton of television, but this is a talented guy. I mean, he's done a lot of good work. And what amazes me is that these films, while he has interviews and he sits down with people and historians and experts on the topic and that sort of thing, is the way he shoots still photos to create the illusion of movement.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if he's the first to ever do that, but he is an absolute master of that. You know, considering on a lot of these topics, you know, stills don't exist. Now, with Vietnam, it's a whole different thing. I mean, that was the first war brought into many Americans' living rooms in color.
Mm-hmm. Daily, on a daily basis.
Yeah, on a daily basis. Walter Cronkite, the CBS Evening News. Just an amazing talent. But I really enjoyed the Roosevelts. Prohibition was another good one. He did, which was just tremendous. But this guy has done a lot of stuff. But yeah, one of his first big one, baseball, 1994. And I remember getting to the end of that documentary, and there was something about Kirby Puckett at the end of that, which was pretty cool. But great talent. So there it is, the next big one, the Vietnam War, coming to PBS in September. Another show you might laugh that I'm really looking forward to, and I haven't heard a lot about it, is The Crown. And as a matter of fact, I've talked about it enough where my mom is now trying to figure out how to get this on Netflix. She hasn't joined Netflix. She's familiar with it. But now she's thinking about making the leap into the Netflix world and checking out The Crown on television. Are you a book reader? I do on occasion. My wife reads one book after another. And if you look at our bookshelf at home, the lion's share are books that she's read. Some of them I've read. I'm mostly kind of a space and science guy. Like, I've read every available book on the space program from the early days of Mercury through Apollo and beyond. But how about this? An upcoming book from Derek Jeter's imprint is co-written by someone close to the Yankee shortstop, his sister, Charlie Jeter. Jeter Publishing, I didn't even know he had a publishing arm, told the AP today that Charlie Jeter and Dr. Samson Davis were collaborating on The Stuff, Unlock Your Power to Overcome Challenges, Soar, and Succeed. The book is scheduled for May of 2018, drawing upon the stories of athletes and entertainers. Among others, The Stuff will highlight 11 core elements essential to success. And I think Derek Jeter is still in the running to buy the Miami Marlins. I know Jeb Bush, a former governor of Florida and a former presidential candidate and the brother of George W. Bush and the son of George H.W. Bush, backed out of that. So Derek Jeter, who knew? Jeter Publishing. Amazing guy. And soon to be a father. I don't know. Is his wife, Hannah, had their first child yet? I don't know. At his monument ceremony at Yankee Stadium, she was very pregnant. I don't know if she's had their first child yet.
I don't know. My wife reads People magazine, so she might know, but I don't.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I'm curious enough where I'm going to Google it during a break. Speaking of celebrity, country legend Loretta Lynn is back home after a stroke she suffered in May. Her new album will be delayed until next year, and all her remaining tour dates this year have been canceled. A statement released today by a record label says the 85-year-old singer-songwriter back home at her place in Tennessee after staying at a rehabilitation facility. Lynn says she's getting stronger every day and her main focus is making a full recovery. Her next album, Wouldn't It Be Great, on Sony Music Legacy Recording, was scheduled to be released in August, but Lynn said in the statement she wanted to wait until next year so she can give it her full attention. How about that? Loretta Lynn, 85, and back home and on her road to recovery. That's amazing. Now, there's one other story I wanted to bring along, and it is a sad story. I don't know if you catch America's Got Talent. Every now and then we'll have it on occasionally at home. But America's Got Talent has aired the audition of a contestant who died in a car accident last month. Did you hear? I hadn't heard about this till I got to the studio earlier this evening. Dr. Brandon Rogers, a family physician from Portsmouth, Virginia, tried out for the show in March. He earned a standing ovation and a trip to the next round of the NBC reality competition after singing Stevie Wonder's Ribbon in the Sky. The 29-year-old died following a June 10th car accident in Maryland. Police said he was a passenger in a vehicle that veered off the road and hit a tree. The show said it aired the audition on Tuesday night at the request of Rogers' family. Rogers sang with Boys to Men during a series of Las Vegas concerts earlier this year. The group paid tribute to him on Instagram following his death. I hadn't heard that story. It is 10:47 here at CCO. We have some highlights from this date in history, July 12th. Some pretty amazing stuff, and we'll get into that in a moment here on the CCO. It is 10:47 Maplewood Toyota time. When you need a new car or truck, it's time to check out MaplewoodToyota.com first. 10:52, 8 minutes now in front of 11 here at CCO. Steve in. Jordana, as you heard a moment ago, in tomorrow here on CCO. I'll be in for Mike Max, Moose Miller in tomorrow night between 9 and 11. Al Malmberg follows the news here at CCO. Some highlights from this date in history, July 12th. 33 years ago, Walter Mondale, named New York Congresswoman Geraldine Ferraro as his running mate on the Democratic ticket. Ferraro was the first woman ever chosen for a major party ticket, and she was delighted.
Thank you, Vice President Mondale. Vice President, it has such a nice ring to it.
And in the fall, they had trouble. As President Reagan easily won a second term. Bill Cosby, the embattled comedian and actor, 80 years old today. Another famous birthday today, singer Christine McVie of Fleetwood Mac was born on this date in 1943. Christine McVie is 74. Of course, this is Say You Love Me.
You lifted me up, never let me down. I'm the spark whenever you're around.
I played that song a ton earlier in my career when I was doing a light format. Played that song quite a bit. Kev, you ever work a light format in your career?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you're a guy who's paid your dues in radio. Let's see. I've done old school, middle of the road, my first radio job. You're probably old enough to know what a middle of the road format is.
Oh, yeah.
That's where you kind of play a little country, a little of this, a little of that. Yeah. Nothing that's going to offend anyone. That's called middle of the road.
Yeah, I think I'm trying to remember. My first format was kind of like that. It was more, I hate to call it adult contemporary, but yeah. We didn't play anything too cutting edge. It was, you know, it was kind of middle of the road, but we didn't really play much country. You know, a new song to us had probably been out for a couple of months when I first started in my first gig.
You know, my first radio job, we'd play, just to give you a sample, Ronnie Mills Sapp would be one, Neil Diamond.
Right.
That kind of thing. Barbara Streisand.
Yeah.
Some mellow Fleetwood Mac stuff.
Yeah, we played. That's we didn't play too much of that Ronnie Millsap type stuff because we had our sister station. You know, we had a country station, which was you know, country. It was hardcore country. You know, back then in the mid '80s. You know, so we played a lot of the Ronnie Millsap and stuff over there. So on the AM, where I first cut my teeth, we played. You know, we play a lot of Elton John. You know, like Daniel.
Would you get Neil Diamond and that sort of thing?
Yeah. Neil Diamond, ABBA.
Eddie Rabbit was another one we'd play quite a bit. A lot of Eddie Rabbit.
Mm-hmm. I love
Crystal Gayle.
Yeah.
Crystal Gayle is another one.
Exactly.
Isn't Crystal Gayle related to Loretta Lynn?
Yes.
That's what I thought. Younger sister.
Are they sisters? I think it's cousin.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, something like that. But anyway, Christine McVie, happy birthday, hard to believe, 74. How about a fitness guru, Richard Simmons? He's 69 years old today.
Oh, get that body going. One, two.
Some of the most bizarre interactions, David Letterman and Richard Simmons.
And have they found Richard Simmons? Because he was like missing or whatever for a while.
He's apparently okay and he's angry about it. He wanted to be left alone. Richard Simmons is alive and well. And finally, among the birthdays today, actor Topher Grace born July 11, 1978. He's 39 years old. He's best known as Eric Foreman in That 70s Show.
Ever since yesterday, I can't stop thinking about you. I want you.
I kind of like That 70s Show. It's pretty good.
I was a big fan of Laura Prepon. Yeah, I was.
Yeah, it was a big hit on Fox. And I remember Topher Grace played a bad guy in one of the Spider-Man movies.
Oh, he did?
I can't remember which one because there's so many of them. And by the way, the newest Spider-Man, Spider-Man Homecoming, is number one. Over the weekend, it hauled in $117 million.
Wow.
That's pretty good. The budget, $175.
Mm.
So they're well on their way
to
getting it done. You know, during the break, I was telling Kev about the movies out right now. Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Men Tell No Tales. I think they made one too many. They spent $230 million on this movie. Mm-hmm. So far, it's only made $168. Do you think the studio's a little nervous?
Yeah, Johnny Depp isn't exactly the draw that he used to be.
Yeah. One that's done very well, budget compared to box office, Wonder Woman, $149 million. They didn't pay the star anything.
Right.
And she was great. Wonder Woman is a really good movie. Set in World War I for the most part, just tremendous. $149 million to make, $368 million so far. So they've done very, very well. With Wonder Woman. Another one, Despicable Me, $80 million to make, Despicable Me 3, by
right.
the way. $80 million to make, $148 million so far. All right, we've got to run. The news, the weather, Al, all coming up here on CCO. Tonight, cloudy, low of 62.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.